New Year's message. 10 tips for 2010. Next year I'm going to reduce the number, even though we're going up to 11, 2011. It was hard enough to get through them all earlier. The first point is actually longer than the rest, but I want to spend a little time on it, and then we'll move on quickly. But if you go online, for some reason, when we do this event, the top 10 or the top 8 or whatever it happens to be, or tips for the new year, seems to be all the internationals like to hear the New Year's message for some reason. It's like last year's, I think it's 2,000 downloads of people hearing the same message you're hearing. So when I preach, I'll also be keeping some other people in mind as well. But tip number 10, as we go into the year, is that I'd like for us to move away from being the church cynic to being the church promoter. Move away from being the church cynic to the church promoter or the church lover. And I'll give you a verse for that. 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 13. It says that there are such men as false apostles, deceitful workmen, masquerading as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, for Satan himself masquerades as an angel of light. And this is the background for that. This point is that don't let Satan steal God's church from you. We already know that Harold Camping is out there. Who knows who else is there? And that he has basically said that God is done with the church. So it makes it very convenient if you get an official representative who speaks in the name of God, supposedly, and tells you, well, we don't even need the church anymore. And not to mention just the casualness of America. And I'm be frank with you, I see it everywhere, and I am appalled and tired of hearing it. This is perhaps the worst sin that one of them that America we could be at as Christians, and that is basically the church is an option. We can just take it or leave her. We like God, we like our relationship with God, but you know, well, the church don't particularly care for that. And so we try to live an individual Christian life. And a ton of Christians, maybe a majority, I don't know what the figures are just trying to live with the relationship with God, which is great. But I tell you, God created a church. And when I say church, I'm using the word an organization this morning, particularly. An institution. Hebrews 10:24-5 says, "Let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. Let us not give up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. Let us encourage one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching." The closer we get to the end, the closer we get to Christ's arrival, all the more we should meet together to encourage and spur each other on to love and good works in the name of Christ with the gospel moving forward. You know, what has God done? Well, the church hasn't done it. The establishment hasn't done it. Individuals haven't done it. But God has established His own church, His own organization. It's not a human invention. 1 Timothy 3:14, it says that in 15, Paul says that the church is the church of the living God. And he gives instruction on how people should conduct themselves in God's household, which is the church of the living God. And then he says, it's the pillar and foundation of truth. The church is the pillar and foundation of truth. And what Paul means by that is that you want to find a place to go to where you want to discover what is true and real, what the bottom line is. That's why God set up the church. To put it another way, not that every church is perfect or that any church is perfect, why did God organize the church? Well, He did it because we house the gospel. This is the one place where you can find how to get right with God and how to walk with God. And if we begin to minimize in our minds, directly, indirectly, or just treat her as casually, as soon as we drift more and more that way as a country or as a Christian community, particularly now that we're going online and everybody just kind of has this general feel, you know, we got our church, we can talk to other Christians, you know, online, which is fine. Next thing you know, but as soon as we lose the organization, we may lose the gospel altogether. The church has been charged to house the gospel. This is the bank vault, if you will, and we keep it open. And we like to open it up and say, come on in, you know. Go into the vault and experience the treasure. And so, unfortunately, I believe that the American Christians, we've sinned greatly by minimizing not the church of Presbyterianism, not the church of Methodism or whatever, but the church of the living God. 1 Timothy 3, God tells us through St. Paul that we're to have elders, we're to have deacons. We see the same thing in Titus. And it's interesting, when Paul leaves Titus in Crete to there with these new Christians, and he says, by the way, I've left something undone. I want you to take care of it. I want you to ordain elders. I want you to ordain officers there. You see, it's undone. The church is unfinished without the organization. Yes, it's true. Organizations can be dead and dull. And believe it or not, if you live in any organization or get near it for a while, or near a person, you know what I mean? They're going to disappoint you. I've been a Christian for 36 years. Disappointed by practically every person I know, Christian or not. Disappointed myself. You know what I'm saying? I disappoint myself. But, you know, we just don't throw people away. We just don't throw the organization, especially the church, away. We're going to let each other down. But, you know, we need, instead of being the cynic, we need to be the lover and the protector. Do you understand what I'm saying here? We need to be the promoter of Jesus Christ's church. It's the church of the living God. We have to rise to the occasion in response to where America slid. So many Christians just walking around loose ends. I tell you, they're in serious trouble. Point number one is, let's move away from being a church cynic to being a church lover. And I mean the organization. Of course, if a church doesn't have the gospel, it's not really a church. It's just a, whatever, a dead institution. Well, point number nine. This won't take as long. Be slow to judge. Moving into the new year, be slow to judge. I think of the Jesus, the passage there, the story is told in John 8, how the teachers of the law and the Pharisees bring a woman there into the temple or the synagogue area. And it says, they made her stand before the group and said to Jesus, teacher, this woman was caught in the act of adultery. The law of Moses commanded us to stone such women. Women, now what do you say? Of course, they posed the question. They wanted to trap him. And then Jesus bends down and he starts to write on the ground with his finger. And when they kept on questioning him, he straightened up and he said, if any one of you is without sin, let him be the first to throw a stone at her. Again, he stooped down and wrote on the ground. At this, those who heard began to go away, one at a time. The older ones went away first until only Jesus was left with the woman standing there. And Jesus straightened up and asked her, woman, where are they? Is there no one here to condemn you? No one, sir, she said. Then neither do I condemn you. Jesus declared, go now and leave your life of sin. Someone says, God Himself doesn't propose to judge a man until the final day. Let's be slow to judge. Doesn't mean we don't use discretion. Doesn't mean that organizations, churches don't make judicial decisions. But as individuals, let's be slow. As a friend of mine told me recently, and it's been very helpful, there's always one thing you don't know about the situation. There's always something you don't see. When a guy cuts in front of you with a car, you know what I mean? Cuts you off, you know, first you're ready to make the gesture or yell out what you're going to do. You don't know. And what has happened that day. It reminds me of Chuck Swindoll. He said he was going to speak at a conference. Some guy came up at the beginning of the conference and says, I'd love to hear you teach and preach. I'm glad to meet you in person. I'm looking forward to hearing you personally. Swindoll begins to preach the first day and teach. Here's the guy in the front, and he's snoozing off. He's like, shh. And Swindoll says, oh, well, you know, he probably like had a long drive. It's the first day of the conference. Second day, what's this guy doing? He's like sitting up there and he's like drifting off. Swindoll's thinking, man, this guy doesn't care about this. He's thinking, you know, does he even, why is he even here? Why does he even bother? He's just tickling my ear. What's he doing? And he's not even listening. And he did this throughout the conference. Finally, the last day, the man's wife came up to Chuck Swindoll and he said, by the way, I wanted you to know this. You probably don't know it, but my husband has cancer. He's on a heavy medication. It's a hard time staying awake. Just thought you might like to know that. You see, there's always one more thing that we may not know. Let's be slow to pass judgment on those around us. God will take care of the judgment. Number eight, tip eight, as we move into the new year, remember your Creator in your youth. Some of you are already wondering already about that one because you're thinking, how am I like 80 years old listening to this message? Ecclesiastes 12:1, remember your Creator in the days of your youth. Let me just say this. You're not going to get any younger. So as far as I'm concerned, you're in your youth. You're as young as you ever get. And you still have more energy and more time on your hand than you're ever going to get. You got that? Okay. He said, remember your Creator in your youth before the days of trouble, when you say, I find no pleasure in them, before the sun and the light and the moon and the stars grow dark and the clouds return after the rain, when the keepers of the house tremble and the strong men stoop, when the grinders cease because they're few. Basically, you're losing your teeth. Understand, they're worn out, they're falling out, they're rotting out. Remember your Creator before those looking through the window grow dim. And now your eyes start failing. I know people right now, you go visit them in their home, they can't see a thing, are they? Like, they got these big magnifying glasses, like it's the size of like the moon. It's like, whew, trying to look through there to read something. Or it says, when the doors to the street are closed and the sound of the grinding fades, when men rise up, Ecclesiastes says, at the sound of birds, but all their songs grow faint. Faint. You can't hear. I mean, there's my father-in-law who's 90 years old, you know. You basically got to talk to him, like repeat it 29 times. Hey, Bill, you know. It's like there's a ton of ice in front of your door. Huh? What? What are you saying? And you start yelling. He said, you're talking too loud. It's like, and he hasn't heard a thing you said. You talk lower. So, but he's a great guy. But his ears are horrible. He can't hear a thing. The only way he can talk to him is over the phone. For some reason he can hear over the phone. But remember your Creator why you can. You don't want to be like Ty Cobb. It was John MacArthur, Pastor MacArthur was saying about Ty Cobb. He says he's the Baseball Hall of Famer. He used to be a very mean guy. He'd slide in second base with his spikes up, and they had the steel spikes, and he just ripped somebody's second baseman's leg up. Sliding in as a runner, trying to get safely, he didn't care if he like butchered you, cut you up with his spikes. He tried to. He wanted to be safe. He didn't care about your health. And that's the way he played baseball all of his life. And according to MacArthur, Cobb came to Christ late in life, Ty Cobb. And he said these words. He says, quote, I came to Christ in the bottom of the ninth inning. I could only have wished that it was at the top of the first. We don't want to do that. Either come to Christ late or being Christians for a long time and then look back and say, what did I do with my life? Boy, I wish I would have done more with it. Somebody has said that we'll never regret any of the good things we've done on this earth. Only the things that weren't so good or the good things we could have done, and the opportunities we missed that are gone. We all know the saying, only one life, it'll soon be past, and only what's done for Christ is going to last. It'd be a great saying to remember moving into 2010, remembering our Creator. Because we're gonna, this year, more than ever, because we're going to have as much energy now as we're ever going to get. And then tip seven, excel in the grace of giving for 2010. Excel in the grace of giving. I'm tempted almost to not talk about this, but you know, this congregation is giving so well, that's all the more for me to talk about it. Because I really believe we cannot outgive God. And what I mean by that is I think we've just begun to realize the more we give, the more He gives so that we have more to give. I'll talk about that in a moment. 2 Corinthians 8:7. just as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, and in complete earnestness, and in your love for us, St. Paul says, see that you also excel in this grace of giving. I'd like you to try to experiment with me for 2010. Some of you have already, in fact, only know nine families signed up in the Faith Promise program. Nine families. I know we got a lot of money last year. I'd like more people to sign up, but that's not my main point. I want to get to the big principle here. It's because I want you to try this experiment. I want you to try to give to the cause of God. I'm not even talking about Grace Church per se here, but the cause of Christ, to advance the gospel, to do something good, to help somebody, to bless somebody, and to give in your heart in a bigger way than you did in the past. And I realize some people don't have jobs this year, maybe had them last year. But we're talking about proportionally to what you have. Go beyond proportionally what you've given, done in the past. And I would want you to test this, that I want you to give and see it with the purpose of not getting, but getting to give again. Giving so that to see if God doesn't give you more so that you can be able to give again. Do you understand? It's not giving to give, but giving to give. And I believe I'm learning this principle in 2 Corinthians 9, verse 10. He says, now he who supplies seed to the sower and bread for food will also supply and increase your store of seed and will enlarge the harvest of your righteousness. And then verse 11, which I think he's talking about leading people to Christ with your money. But then verse 11, he says, you will be made rich in every way so that you can be generous on every occasion. And through us, your generosity will result in thanksgiving to God. Let me tell you what I think the biblical principle is here. Is that if we can learn to give generously, not freely, not reluctantly, not because you're compelled, but freely because we want to bless somebody, I believe you will find that God will bless you right back directly. This is not a health and wealth gospel, but He's going to bless you because He understands that you're going to take what He gives you. When you empty your pocket, He'll fill it again because He knows you're going to empty it again. You see the idea. And then that's going to change people's lives. And people are going to, boy, isn't God great? And I think that's what we see in Liberia. That church, those people over there, want to model Grace Reformed Presbyterian Church. Don't ask me why. I guess they haven't gotten to know us yet. But you know what I mean? But they see something. They say, I don't know what the true church is, but if it's anything like you, that's what we want to be. And I believe that's the principle, that we can learn that, you know, it's been said, and I guess it's true, that somebody has said that, has heard it often, that there's only one place in the Bible where you're told to actually test God. Otherwise, you're told not to test Him, right? Don't test the Lord. And that area is in Matthew or Malachi 3, where it's, you're told to test God by giving your money. There the Israelites are accused and indicted because they held back of their tithes and their offerings. And He said, look, you're robbing me. You're robbing me. And He said, I want you to try this experiment. Test me and see if it's not true. You give your tithes and your offerings, and He says, and I will open up the floodgates of heaven and see if you can contain all I want to do through you. We read that about that Malachi chapter 3 to 10. Test me in this, says the Lord Almighty, and see if I will not throw open the floodgates of heaven and pour out so much blessing that you will not have enough room for it. I want you to test it this year. Test Luke 6:38. Given, it will be given to you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. It will be poured into your lap, for with the measure you use, it will be measured back to you. Give it a test. See what happens. You don't have to report to me. You don't have to report to the church, the session. Nobody's keeping count in terms of that. Just between you and God. Excel in the grace of giving. It'd be amazing to see what the Lord will do, especially as we consider missions and the need for the gospel to go forward. And that has nothing to do with greed or nothing to do with getting. It has to do with giving so that we can bless people in a greater way. And then the joy of seeing what God could do through us. Isn't that exciting? I get a lot of excitement about seeing what He's doing in Liberia. And then tip number 6, don't underestimate small things. Some people say, well, I don't have a lot to give or I can't. And whether you're receiving or giving, but appreciate and the power, the wonder of something small. Zechariah 4:10. Who despises the day of small things? We all know about the widow's two coins she threw in, and there's the story's captured for us. She gave out of her poverty, but it was a lot in the sight of God. And I want to draw your attention to one little incident. You remember David and Goliath? In the story of David and Goliath, there's a detail you might have missed. 1 Samuel 17:40. David took his staff in his hand, and he chose five smooth stones from the stream. It goes on to say, reaching into his bag and taking out one stone, he slung it and struck the Philistine on the forehead. That one stone sank into his forehead, and he fell face down on the ground. And so David triumphed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone, one stone, without a sword in his hand. The point I want to make is, you know, he picked up five stones, but he only needed one. You see, that saying is so true that, you know, God, if God's on your side, God plus one, or if you put it this way, one plus God's a majority. One little thing. And it can do a lot when God takes that one little thing and uses it. A single compliment, Mark Twain said, can keep me going for 6 weeks. A single smile, a handshake, you know, a visit, a little thing, a card, something. You'd be surprised, especially if people are at the breaking point. A little thing, a prayer, a few words. I like what that saying says about, you know, it's one word of kindness can make a huge difference, because one word can be the difference between lightning and lightning bug. You see, you just put that little thing in there, it makes a world of difference. So that's tip number six. Appreciate the power. Don't underestimate the power of small things, small contribution given or received. And then tip five, be the bottom line at something in God's church. Be the bottom line. I didn't say be the top line. What I mean by that is, this organization, whether it's here or any other place, doesn't operate without some bottom line people. And we're just not talking session here or deacons. You know, someone's got to be in charge of the superintendent. Well, then someone's got to be the bottom line to be the Sunday school teacher. Someone's got to be the bottom line to be a substitute. Someone's got to be the bottom line to be in the nursery. And not just in charge of the nursery, but actually to sign up. Children's church, someone's actually got to be the bottom line. And it means you have to put your name somewhere to do something. Do you understand? As a general rule, and I realize they're shut-ins, and I realize that people have health issues and all that. I'm not here to put people on a guilt trip. And I know a lot of people are the bottom line. You got it. You understand. But the big point is this, that the organization of God's church doesn't function unless you step up and say, hey, I own this. And we just can't, in a lot of our lives, we have so many choices in America, we just go through them, and everything's an option. We can do this, or I might stop by, and without committing, you know what I mean? And God's church needs people willing to make commitments, to be bottom lines, even if the bottom line to sign up for something every 3 months or something, and then just follow through. And that's just part of being a mature Christian. And Ephesians 4, here's the verse for you. Ephesians 4:16, for from Christ the whole body, joined and held together by every supporting ligament, grows and builds itself up in love. When? How? As each part does its work. As each part. Signing up for the bottom line, doing whatever portion that you say, I can do this. And that can be scary, though. And I'll share one brief illustration with you. My dad had a lot of jobs. One of the summer jobs he did, actually, it was summer for me, it was year-round for him, was painting houses. I was no good at painting houses when I first tried. And Dad said, come on, and he wanted some help. I think he really wanted to help me, not me help him, because I messed up the first few. But and he'd get this 40-foot ladder out, put it up there, and he'd say, you get up and climb up on this 40-foot ladder, you know. Not too thrilled about doing that. And so you're going up the ladders like, okay, finally agree you're going to do it, and you're going like this, you know, holding on to the sides and holding on to the rungs, and you're going really slow. It takes you forever to get to the top. And who wants to be up 40 foot in the air painting? Nobody. So you're up there, and you got this brush. He's already put the bucket and the brush up there for you. All you got to do is climb, and he's not going to carry you up. So you get up there, and so finally, you know, you get the bucket, you get the brush out. So you're frozen onto this ladder, holding on it tight. It's like, what are you going to be able to paint? You got to stretch your arm out. You know, it's like you can't even. So finally, you say, okay, I'm going to get this little spot over here. You can do about a 2-inch square. It's about all the farther you want to move, you know. So, but after about 20, 30 minutes, you realize, hey, you know, nothing's happening. Everything's cool. You kind of relax, chill out. Next thing you know, you loosen up and you start going out. And next thing you know, like you're saying, man, this is not bad up here. You're leaning way out and Dad's yelling, watch, you don't lean too far. You'll fall off the ladder. You see? And then you start painting with your left hand. Next thing you know, it's no big deal. And after that, you're carrying a 40-foot ladder around a wooden ladder yourself, carrying this big thing around the house, helping him, you know, as he's getting older, you start carrying the ladder for him. So you get the point. Bottom line, scary. But you know, as Hudson Taylor says, you know, God's will done in God's way will never lack God's supply. So this year I challenge you to step up. And if you're already on the bottom line, stay on the bottom line and hold the fort, so to speak. Tip 4, I'll try to push them through here a little faster here for you. If I can turn the pages the right way. Never tire of doing good. Never tire of doing good. And that's, you know, the Galatians 6:8 and following, 6:9. Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest if we don't give up. Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all people, especially to those who belong to a household of faith, or the family of believers. It's not become weary in doing good. Let me ask you this. Literally, raise your hand. How many of you get tired sometimes of doing good? Just face up to it, okay? Sometimes it's just exhausting to be nice to people. You'd rather yell at them, ignore them, leave them alone. Just say, why doesn't somebody else do it? Right? Just face it. And we get exhausted. It may mean you need a rest. It may mean you're overcommitted. Some of those things might be true. But there's a general principle that you can't give up on. That's in your core. Don't hate be doing good. What else you got? It's the second greatest commandment. Love God. Love people. You know, do good for God. Do good for other people. The second commandment is just like the first. And if we get tired and worn out about feeling like, oh, I don't want to do any good. This is just too exhausting. Then what is that? Doing good? Doing bad or doing nothing? That's all you got left. You understand? Not a good place to be mentally, in your heart and spirit. If you're too weary to exert yourself to do something beneficial for some other people, so I'd say recommit to that. The fact you want to, you know, be a good influence on the people around you. I know that your parents would love that for the kids. Well, the kids are going to learn what they see in you. They're going to learn what they see modeled in you. A lot of you are doing a lot of good, and you're pushing yourself in many ways. And that's why I go to point 3 is that every day find time to feed your soul, because it gets exhausting. Every day find time to feed your soul. It gets exhausting being a nice person. And what I mean by that is not, it's just letting the goodness come out of you that Christ declares you to be. He declares you to be a good person. He declares you to be upright. And trying to live out of that grace can be tiresome. And so we have to revisit the gospel and look back at what God has to say to us. As Deuteronomy 8 says, man and woman does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. The way we do well in life is to feed our spirit inside. If you're not feeding yourself, you don't have much to give. You put in the hours, you punch the clock, change the diapers, and you do all that stuff, and you go and you get all that stuff done. But really, if your soul's not fed, you're not giving money anybody very much. You're just like doing the shell. And so Romans 12:4 says, don't be conformed to this world anymore, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. I hope to speak more about that next week. Ephesians 4:21, you were taught in Him to put off your old self and to be renewed in the spirit of your mind. I'll use this one analogy just to elaborate that a little bit. I went in the basement yesterday. Guess what? Like some of you, you found a bunch of water, right? All the snow's melting, all the water's there. So what was I doing about every half hour? The first time it was exhausting to get it all cleaned up. I don't have a shop vac. After you get it cleaned up, then you go down every half hour because it's still coming in. It's still raining, and you're getting these towels down there, the dry towels, and you're wringing them out for about 15 minutes or so, 20 minutes or whatever. And then it's all dried up, and you go away, but you know you better go back in a half hour because it's going to be there. It's going to be building up. The water's getting deeper. Otherwise, you're going to be swamped. You understand? You should be drowning. It'll be up to your neck. That's the same way it is in life. People find themselves up to their neck, swamped, drowning, and it's simply because they haven't gone down often enough, you know what I'm saying, to avoid becoming swamped. It's talking about feeding your soul and your spirit so that you're not overwhelmed. If you go just Sunday to Sunday, you know, you're barely making the minimum to stay healthy and vibrant in your Christian life. So find time to feed your soul on a regular basis throughout the week. And then tip number two, which I mentioned to you on Christmas Eve, I'll repeat it again, for the whole year, not just for Christmas, and that is choose joy. Choose joy. As what the gospel says, he said, when Christ came, I bring you good news of great joy. Philippians 4:4, Paul writes from prison. He says, rejoice in the Lord always. Again, I say it, in case you didn't hear it the first time, Paul says, again, I say it, rejoice. And I want to use one brief argument here to buttress this. Why you should take joy. Why you should rejoice. Have a positive spirit. Paul writes these words. This is an argument from the greater to the lesser. He writes from inside prison. Here's a guy, a prisoner, inside the prison. Bars, if you will. And he says, rejoice. If he can say rejoice from inside a prison, how much more should we be able to rejoice from outside who are free? You understand? In other words, he goes on to say he's learned what it means to have a lot and have a little and to be hungry, to be well fed. And he says, I've learned to be content in every situation and to find joy in every situation. John Calvin said, there's nothing in our afflictions which ought to disturb our joy. J.I. Packer, joy is a condition that's experienced, yes, but it's more than a feeling. It's primarily a state of mind. Do you hear that? Joy is a state of mind. And so make your state of mind be one of rejoicing. Find something in Christ. Reconnect to Him. And I think you'll find your joy. Which brings us to the last point. Is tip number one, stay near the cross. Stay near the cross. There's no greater advice I can give you than that one. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 2:2, I've resolved to know nothing while I was with you except Jesus Christ and Him crucified. 1 Corinthians 1:18, for the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but not to us who are being saved. It's the power of God. And then Galatians 6:14, may I never brag about anything except the cross of our Lord Jesus Christ. The truth is, apart from Christ, you stand guilty from God, and I stand guilty from God. Just guilty before God. Apart from Christ, we're condemned, and this is the gospel. I'll share this last little story to illustrate this. Hopefully, you'll get it. And anybody watched the special last night that was on a little bit late? It was a young man who was convicted of rape and murder. He was in prison. He had been in there 9 years. And guilty. Rape and murder. And as it turns out, now that they have DNA, right, they're able to see a lot of who actually did the crime. They can see the DNA of the person who committed the crime on this girl's clothing. And the guy was convicted. Really, his DNA was nowhere to be found on her. And it turns out that the man who was in prison for 9 years, it was not his crime. It was someone else's crime. You see, he shouldn't have been inside that jail cell. The crime did not belong to him. The crime belonged to someone else. In the same way, the judgment of God did not belong to our Lord Jesus. He was not the one who was to be in hell. Someone else should have been there. And that's why we need to stay near the cross. Colossians 2:14 says, "But Christ, having canceled the written code with its regulations that was against us and that stood opposed to us, Christ took it away, nailing it to the cross." Stay near the cross. It's the best place you can find the love of God. It's the best place for us to be today and throughout the new year. It's the one place where it will carry you through the entire year and carry you into the eternity. Happy New Year. Let's pray. Lord, we bow before you. Help us to stay near the cross of Jesus Christ. Help us to remember that it is the best place where we can be to find your love always. Love which will carry us through the entire year and into eternity. Use this message to help us throughout the new year to keep trusting and serving you until we meet you and thank you face to face.